Everyone has an opinion when it comes to having a baby and raising kids. Just get the epidural. There's no prize for doing it natural. In my day, we just let the baby cry until they settle themselves down. Have you tried sage oil? And so many more comments, most of them unsolicited. Welcome to the Birth and Parenting Things podcast. My name is Kim, and I've got opinions too. I'm kind of an expert on birth. I've also managed to raise 3 babies into young adults. I'm here to offer evidence-based information, stories, personal experiences on birth, parenting, and everything in between. So let's do this. Okay, hello and welcome back to Birth and Parenting Things podcast. I am your host, Kim Fernandez, doula extraordinaire, childbirth educator, and mom to 3 amazing adult humans. They're adult because they're over the age of 18. They're not old. I mean, they're old, but anyways. We'll get into the next sort of chapter of inductions in a minute, but I had a bit of a revelation yesterday. We talk a lot about, in the postpartum period, birth parents, the main parent, being what we call touched out. There comes a period of time where the just recently birthed parent or the main parent has had a baby on them constantly, or other children wanting their needs, things like that. And they basically become what we call touched out. Like, they don't want to be touched anymore. They're just done. They're in overload mode. And we talk about this, and it's important because we need to recognize that this is happening. And it's incredibly important that we recognize that, you know, the birthing parent or that main parent is going to, you know, they're going to need a break. They can't constantly have somebody on them all the time. Well, I had this revelation yesterday afternoon. That thud was my dog jumping off the couch. Yesterday afternoon, when I sort of realized that my children, I'm a single parent, and I've been a single parent for almost 10 years now, coming up on 10 years. And I don't mind it. Like, I really like, you know, looking after my kids and, you know, being there for them. But they're young adults at this point, and they're at an age where they are, you know, they're still needing things and they're still needing my support. And while I'm not physically touched out by them, I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of emotionally touched out by them, or mentally touched out. And it's because they really don't spend hardly any time with their father. And that's not a negative towards him. It's just they're very busy. They're very busy young adults. And there isn't a lot of time to, you know, spend with their dad, because they're working and they're going to school and they're studying and they're seeing their friends and all of this stuff. And that's generally just what happens. But that means that because that parent isn't there to take on some of this burden, it's all my burden. And I don't want to say burden as a negative, but it's all on me. And it's a lot. And it's coming to a point where I just don't want to know about it anymore. But then that doesn't help them. They need that help and support. And I want to be there for them, but I also need somebody to take up some of that mantle as well. And I just don't have that option. So for anyone who has friends that are single parents, like, just know they might be, you know, they might need some help. They might need a break. So anyways, that's kind of my revelation. That whole, you know, main parent being touched out, it changes, but it transforms into being mentally touched out. So there's always something, right? So anyways, my bathroom is chugging along. It should be, keep in mind, I've recorded some of these podcasts very close together. Next week should be close to being finished. They're tiling tomorrow, very excited. I don't think the floor tiles, because I ordered those special order and they're going to take a little bit to come in, but definitely the wall tiles and painting. And I'm now panicking about when my vanity is going to get here because I have no delivery date yet for it, even though I ordered it 2 weeks ago. So I'm a little stressed. Anyways, so we're on the topic over the last two podcasts. We're on the topic of medical inductions, and especially as we get close to, you know, for our American friends, we don't have our Thanksgiving in November. We had it in October, but our big holiday at this time of year is going to be Christmas. And as we approach Christmas, inductions kind of come up. So even though it isn't necessarily something that we get a lot of, because your care provider is likely not going to be the one that induces you or is going to be there for your birth. But we do sometimes have inductions suggested, especially if your due date is December 25th or New Year's Eve or things like this, either before or after that. Now, I myself, as I've mentioned in the past, have been induced three times, and I do not regret my labors being induced. I did for a bit with my son, but I have since come to terms with his birth, and I know that it was the best thing for us. And given his size and the fact that he was so stubborn about actually being born. However, during that time period, even though I had midwifery care, I was never told about the various methods of natural, and I use air quotes, natural induction that I could have tried. And Googling this stuff was not something that you did. I mean, back then it was Yahoo, right? I mean, my kids are older. My first child is older than Google. And I probably would have tried some of these things if I had known. I do remember the midwife suggesting sex, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but that was pretty much it. She never suggested anything else. So I will say, however, that no induction is natural. Okay. What I'm going to talk about are techniques that will not necessarily put you into labor, but will hopefully get you closer to the edge so that if a medical induction is warranted, it will most likely end in a vaginal birth as opposed to a surgical birth. And these would be considered non-medical because these are things that you can do at home on your own or outside of obstetrical and midwifery care. So as mentioned, the first thing that can be tried is sex. Sex, sex, and more sex. For many, sex got your baby in and sex can get your baby out. And it works on a couple of different levels. Firstly, the birthing parent needs to have an orgasm. So these can be achieved in a couple of different ways, usually including nipple or clitoral stimulation. And these can be done either alone or with your partner. An orgasm will release the hormone oxytocin, which we love oxytocin, and which also helps get the uterus contracting. Trials suggest that if done when the cervix is ripened or softened, thinning and dilated slightly, that more people will go into labor within 3 days of starting this sort of regimen. If the cervix is not ripened, there's no significant move toward labor beyond ripening of the cervix. Now, this is important because it can still get you closer to going into labor, especially as if a medical induction becomes necessary. So again, while sex might not put you into labor, it can get you closer to the edge. Now, secondly, in the case of actual intercourse, one ejaculation of semen during sex is higher in concentration of a hormone called prostaglandin, which helps to soften the cervix, make it stretchy, or ripening it. A synthetic form of prostaglandin is often used in the early steps of an induction if the cervix is still long, firm, and closed. We talked about that last week, that gel or that Cervidil helps get the cervix sort of softened and ready for labor. So semen can do that too. We also know that Birthing parents who have an active sex life throughout their pregnancy are more likely to go into labor closer to their due date. However, if you have a high-risk pregnancy or a history of miscarriages, we want to make sure that you're speaking to your doctor or your midwife beforehand to see if it's okay to get that oxytocin flowing. We want to make sure that we keep babies safe until they're ready to be born. Now, another way of getting labor potentially going or getting your body closer to the edge is walking. Walking can also help in getting labor moving forward, and while the scientific evidence is weak as to the effectiveness of walking, it does have advantages. Firstly, being upright and having your hips move can put the baby into a good position for labor and have the baby's head putting more direct pressure onto the cervix to get it ripened, which we love. Secondly, walking is a great way to reduce stress. So I feel that one reason we're keeping our babies in longer than what we would have historically is because we're constantly under a state of stress. And I think the second reason is because we're basically sedentary these days. But the body's main job at the end of your pregnancy is to keep this baby safe. And if it feels that there's something causing you stress, it's going to keep baby on the inside. You see, the mind and the body don't categorize stress. They don't identify the difference between getting a report done before you go on mat leave, getting the car seat installed properly and on time, or being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. It's all stress. But the being chased by a saber-toothed tiger is the one that's going to put you and baby in danger. So finding ways to relax and reduce those stress hormones, because we know that stress hormones are going to actually lower oxytocin levels. So finding ways to reduce stress and get your body moving closer to labor can be extremely helpful. It's funny, I had a client one time and she was on her way to get the car seat installed by the dealership. The dealership was going to install the car seat for her. And she was overdue. She was maybe about a week overdue, or not quite, maybe just over 40 weeks. And as she was driving home with that last task checked off her list, as she was driving home, her water broke. So she wasn't doing anything strenuous for this to happen. She was just, her body, everything just kind of went, it's all done. It's all checked off. We're ready to go. And the body said, all right, it's ready to go. Let's do this. So walking and finding ways to reduce stress can be extremely helpful as you get close to the end of your pregnancy. And if you're not into walking, or if you're having a winter baby and walking isn't going to be the easiest thing for you to do outside for extended periods of time, then consider even meditation. So there's definitely apps and whatnot that you can use for guided meditation to make it easier for you. But just find, 10, 15 minutes a day to just relax and let your mind go. Now, another way we can that has been suggested in getting labor going is eating dates. So, funnily enough, this is a very common thing done around the world. So the scientific evidence, however, is weak on eating dates, but many cultures around the world do actually traditionally consume dates during their pregnancy. It's suggested that eating 6 to 7 large dates in a 24-hour period starting at 37 weeks could help in ripening your cervix, thus getting it ready for labor. And that can be extremely beneficial, as I say, if a medical induction is planned. Pardon me. Dates are also very nutritious. They contain carbohydrates, healthy fats, 15 types of salts and minerals, protein, dietary fiber, and 6 vitamins. However, if you are gestationally diabetic, it is possible that it could increase your blood sugar. So be careful and make sure that you speak to your endocrinologist first before you start consuming dates. But it's been suggested, even in the scientific studies that have been done, while weak, it's been suggested that eating dates prior to going into labor could make your labor shorter, could get you going into labor closer to your due date, and actually have a more comfortable labor. I had a client whose mom was from, they were from, I want to say Dubai, Saudi Arabia, I can't entirely remember. I can't exactly remember, but that region of the world. And her mom sent her every single week a box of dates. Every single week in the mail, a box of dates would come, and her mother was insistent that she eat these dates. Now, this was her first birth, so we don't have anything to compare this to, but she was actually in labor and able to hide it from her partner because her partner had an exam that day and she wanted him to go write the exam. So she kind of hid in the bathroom and labored away, and I think she saw him a couple times before he left, but there was no indication that she was in labor. She was managing things really, really well. Now, of course, it was early-ish labor. And when her partner had left, I came and finished laboring with her until he came home. And then we headed off to the hospital. And she actually had a fairly comfortable labor. It was amazing that she was able to hide it from him. And was that the dates? Hard to say. Don't know. But it could be. Another way is acupuncture. And this is sort of one of the more final ways. Acupuncture, while we do need more high quality research on it, acupuncture and acupressure can help in getting the cervix ripened if done by a trained traditional Chinese medicine practitioner who specializes in pregnancy. Studies did not find that using these methods would put you into labor, but they could get you closer to labor, especially if a medical induction is already in the works. The few clients I've had that have done acupuncture leading up to an induction actually needed less medical interventions, and the labor just needed really a little nudge to get going. It's not like you're going to have pins sort of all over your body or anything like that. The acupuncture and acupressure points are, I believe, in your ankles, lower back, and shoulder. And the one client I remember specifically, she actually fell asleep during the first visit with the TCM. And at the next visit that she went, she was just bored and she didn't go back for a third. But her induction was scheduled for the next few days. And yeah, it just went off actually pretty well. Now, there are a couple of commonly used techniques for, air quotes, natural labor induction that actually don't work, and one that I would actually advise you to avoid. One of them is red raspberry leaf tea. So red raspberry leaf tea is commonly believed to induce labor. However, there's no research to support this. Red raspberry leaf tea is known as a uterine tonic and can help make the smooth muscle fibers of the uterus actually work more efficiently and smoothly. So it's often used as treatment for menstrual cramps, things like that, and can be very helpful for that. So drinking red raspberry leaf tea, and you would want to start low. I would, you know, maybe start 36 weeks, but even 37 weeks, but you would start low, like with maybe half a cup to a cup a day, and then you could increase if you find that you're starting to get very crampy, especially if you're not close to that 40-week date, then you would want to sort of back off and lower the dosage that you're taking. But this could mean that, given that it is sort of a uterine tonic, it could mean that you could possibly have a more comfortable labor, and some suggest a shorter labor. Plus, I think taking some time to sit and have a cup of tea can help reduce that stress, which is never a bad thing. Now, the one that I generally wish to avoid is castor oil. I personally have an aversion to the use of castor oil. This is a bias I have, and I will openly admit that I have a bias on this. I have seen it used, and the outcomes were awful. Castor oil should never be used unless it's under the guidance of a medical professional. It's a potent laxative and can cause intense diarrhea, thus also potentially dehydration, and it might not actually work in starting labor. It's also possible that it could cause intense contractions on top of a lot of diarrhea and dehydration, and now you're in labor with diarrhea. So I'm not a huge fan of it. If you choose to go this route, be careful and consider using extremely low doses. The one client in particular that I had used this, it was against my advice in using it, but her partner, who lived in a different province, was home for the weekend. He worked in a different province, and he was home for the weekend, and the mother-in-law insisted that she try this. They wanted to have the baby this weekend because he was home. But she was not 40 weeks pregnant. She was, I think, maybe 38. And as a result, she tried it. She took a large amount of it. And when I got to the hospital and she was in triage, she was suffering with some fairly intense contractions. And she was actually, once she got admitted, it was determined that her white blood cell counts were so low, she was actually, which was a pre-existing condition, that she was incapable of having an epidural. So she ended up having really, really intense contractions and suffering through the labor itself, and ended up, I think she ended up going on some IV pain medication like morphine or something. But that also meant that baby was extremely lethargic afterwards and really not doing well afterwards. So again, it's use at your own risk, but do make sure you're talking to your care provider about it ahead of time. It's not something to play around with, even though it's like air quotes natural. I would be very cautious about using it. Again, not a fan, as you can tell. My mother used it. I think my mother used it with my brother, I think, a spoonful of it mixed up in orange juice. My grandmother's aunt, maybe? I don't think it's her sister. No, I think it's my grandmother's aunt. So my great-grandmother's sister suggested it. And yeah, my mom said she wouldn't wish it on her worst enemy. So take that. For what it's worth. Anyways, as mentioned, none of this stuff, as I say, that I've listed here is going to necessarily put you into labor, but they have been shown to ripen your cervix, and that can get your body closer to going into labor, as well as possibly making a medical induction more successful. And when I say that, I mean resulting in a vaginal birth as opposed to a surgical birth. So always remember, talk to your care provider, your doctor, your midwife to ensure that none of these options are contraindicated for your birth, your pregnancy, and any other health issues you might have, and have at it. See how it works for you. So if you've been induced or you've tried any of these things and you want to let me know how it goes, please feel free to email me at birthandparentythings@gmail.com. You can also search me out and send messages on Instagram at Toronto Doula Group or on TikTok, God help me, at Toronto Doula Group. And yeah, I hope everybody has a really great, great week. And a great weekend. And hopefully the next time I podcast, I'm gonna have a new bathroom. All right. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.